turn your great idea into a reality with our good friends at Squarespace. That's right, Squarespace makes it easier than ever to launch your passion project, whether you're showcasing your work or selling your products of any kind. With beautiful templates and the ability to customize just about anything, you can easily make a beautiful website yourself. And if you do get stuck, Squarespace's 24/7 award-winning customer support is there to help. Head to squarespace.com/bonkers for a free trial. That's squarespace.com/bonkers for a free trial. When you're ready to launch, use the offer code bonkers to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. People, I don't lie when I tell you Squarespace is the shit. My slogan for Squarespace would be this: Squarespace, fuck up the interweb, dude. But they wouldn't take it. I don't know why. Anyway, go to squarespace.com/bonkers to see what I'm talking about in real life. Today's episode is also brought to you by our good friends at Buffy. Buffy makes bedding that is earth-friendly and cruelty-free. And you know what? I'm going to say it. It's fashionable, too. Their latest product, The Breeze, is a comforter made entirely from 100% eucalyptus fiber to regulate temperature and keep you cool and comfortable all night long. It is a great, great comforter. And if you're a koala bear, it's great for you because you can kind of do a little bit of snacking and a little bit of sleeping. But you got to keep on buying these, you know, comforters. And if you're not koala, then you're home free. Anyway, Buffy wants you to try out their comforter for a free trial. If you don't love it, return it. No cost. For $20 off your Buffy comforter, visit buffy.co and enter the code bonkers. That's buffy.co and enter the code bonkers. That's B-O-N-K-E-R-S, buffy.co and enter the code bonkers for $20 off. If you don't like it, send it back. But I can tell you, you're going to love it.
It's like an executive at Lifetime decided, hey, we should make a Quentin Tarantino movie. We saw Deadfall, so you know what that means.
Hey, everybody. Now it's time for...
The Wiltern Theater to talk about Deadfall. Who's got the cake? What is the cake? Is it actually cake? We will get the answer to all these questions and more. Man alive, I cannot believe I've been alive this long and did not know this movie existed. This should have been done year one of this show. It's so good. This is like finding treasure in your backyard. Nicolas Cage, this crazy and no one told me? This doesn't even make the clip reels of people showing you how crazy Nicolas Cage is. To dissect this movie, I have to bring out my two amazing co-hosts. But first, let me bring out Mr. Jason Mantzoukas.
Los Angeles, how we doing tonight? How we doing, balcony?
Monsters.
Balcony monsters in full effect.
Oh my God.
Funny thing about the balcony monsters, never wear pants, just the shirts.
Pantsless, just putting their asses on those seats. Rubbing them around, getting that Wiltern butt. Got a bad case of Wiltern, but...
Ooh, yeah. Jason, Deadfall...
Loved it!
I mean, can't...
This was... Where was this? This is a gem.
Absolutely.
Nicolas Cage was a revelation in this movie. This was... I didn't even know this. This is out there, and nobody's been like... How have you not done this? I blame you fucks for this.
I also feel like this is a movie where every scene they introduce something new that tops the craziness of every scene before it.
Yes.
You're
pool.
Like,
now we're in a pool shark movie with Charlie Sheen. What?
It's all about geometry, triangles.
Mark Columbus. Twain.
Parallelogram.
Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
And my favorite, a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court. No, is that what he says? What
does he say? Yeah. He only lists titles of the books when he describes Mark Twain.
He never read those books.
Never. Why would you improvise such a thing? I feel like that was clearly an improvised moment, and he got caught. He's like, Mark Twain, what do I know? What do I know? books. Should have been like, books, writer.
You want me to talk about books, right? Well, I'm going to need a pencil-thin mustache.
Get me the best red suit you can find. Take the curtains down just like Gone with the Wind. Make me a suit
jacket.
You know what?
Stop plugging Unspooled.
Don't worry about it. Controversial classic? Yes, it is. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my second co-host, the lovely June Diane Raphael. How are you, June?
I'm good. How are you, Paul?
Very good. Thank you for asking. June, thoughts about Deadfall?
I mean, I had a hard time hearing you guys back there, but it seems like you enjoyed this movie. I did not.
Okay. Fair point.
I did wonder, again, it was hard to hear, but I did wonder why we hadn't done it yet, and I was glad we hadn't done it yet. And I was sad that we had to do it.
Would you be sad to find out we're replacing every night of the tour with this movie?
That's the tour.
The
Deadfall tour.
Is making June watch this movie every night.
You know, a couple of people asked me today in my travels around the city.
And you do travel.
I do.
Who are you talking to? Are you on a
just
bird scooter?
By,
are you just on a bird scooter rolling through town?
I mean, listen, I love community. I love
the TV show?
Engaging.
6 seasons and a movie?
He's not announcing the movie.
This is not. Get it together, LA.
So many people asked me today, and some of these people are friends and people I know and some I didn't know, what's the movie tonight? And I always think this is a sign of a terrible experience at a movie theater where I could not remember the name. And I said, it's 2 words.
It's one.
But it's
already,
not one word.
Yes, it is.
It is one word.
In this instance, it is.
Yes, they are
okay,
2 words.
But it makes. But is this a word? What do you? Let's bring out our guest and we'll get into it. Because I don't want to. I don't want to. I have more questions about the title,
okay,
but
so,
let's just.
But
start.
Wait, but finish your thought. You.
Well, but if it's one word, what does that word mean to you?
Well, we should bring out the guest.
That's what I'm saying.
I want. Yeah. I thought you said it's a terrible experience when you go to a movie and you don't. And it,
well, when you can't. When you can't put the title to the movie at all, when you can't, it's like, I feel like every movie we've done is called whatever this movie is.
I will agree, this has a title that is a, like,
it's
there
nonsense.
Are, it's a benign, weird nonsense thing. Yes, I agree.
And it feels like so many movies we've done. And when you said, I said, what is the movie we're doing?
It doesn't feel like so many movies. Nicolas Cage is doing something that might as well be an animated character in the middle of this movie.
Nicolas
Cage,
is next level.
I believe to be in blackface for most of this movie. I don't know what's doing with his deal.
I guess. I mean,
June Let's... doesn't see performances, she just sees titles.
Let's bring our, out okay. our guest, Paul, and then at some point I'd like to return to this conversation.
I would
about
love
Dead
to bring
Paul.
Us back to that, because titles actually is going to come into play with our guest. And our guest has the unique distinction of having an eye for talent. She is the person who saw Oscar Isaac and said, yeah, that guy's got the goods, and she was right. She also is one of the greats, one of the stars of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Please welcome Chelsea Peretti! Chelsea, welcome. Welcome back, Chelsea.
Thank you.
Speaking of titles, this movie is called Deadfall. There are two movies called Deadfall, one with Nicolas Cage and one with Olivia Wilde. You watched the Olivia Wilde one. Tell us about that.
I think what happened is that, one, God hates me. Two, your email, I think that Gmail created a hyperlink.
Okay.
Is that the right terminology?
Yeah.
So I clicked the title thinking you somehow set that up.
Got it.
Thus, so it brought me to the Olivia Wilde...
Oscar Isaac.
No, he's not in
it. Oh, he's not. Okay.
No, no. No, then I wouldn't be filled with rage. But, yeah, so I watched a whole snowy hellscape.
Was it an enjoyable movie? Were you confused why we were doing it, or would it fit into the show?
I have to say it outdoes this Deadfall.
Wow.
I have to say you should now do Deadfall Part 2.
Can I tell you, every movie we do is called Deadfall.
I'll say this. I think we should do, regardless, all the Deadfalls.
Every Deadfall.
Let's do every Deadfall.
And Deadpool 2. Why not just put it all in there? Anything with dead and...
Any combination of dead and fall in other titles, I'll do that as well.
So let's talk
now,
about the
Paul,
title.
Are you sure you didn't hyperlink that?
Yes, we checked it out. It was...
I mean...
Because that's a big mistake.
I know. Like, also, like, if there's multiple Deadfalls, why
Here's
not just spell it out really?
I literally put in the email to Chelsea, the Deadfall that stars Nick Cage.
I also got that email. I didn't click on the link, but if I had, I would have been just as fucked as Chelsea.
That's right.
I clicked on the links that I sent Chelsea. They all led to Deadfall.
No, I'll show you. I'll show you after the show. I wouldn't dream to waste everyone's time with something this minor. Me spending hours and hours watching Deadfalls of every iteration.
Did your child do anything for the first time during the course of you watching the wrong Deadfall?
I missed him. He sang opera for the first time.
At the Met?
He was on stage at the Met.
Wow.
In Italian and French, apparently.
And you had to watch Olivia Wilde Deadfall.
Yeah, she had always like a dark lip. And,
Ooh.
Well, let's talk
I know
about
enough.
The
tons of CGI snow, and she was just always like, with a dark lip peering through CGI snow.
Well, let's talk about the title Deadfall, because, June, you have an issue with the simple merging of words.
I mean, what does Deadfall mean to you?
Honestly, I don't know. I'm not defending it. Like, dead drop would be a term that I've heard.
I mean, maybe I'm going to make myself look a fool right now, but I don't know what that word means.
I wonder, does anybody know nerds? Is there a definition for Deadfall that makes sense for this
what
movie?
Is a Deadfall?
And if so, can one of you numbnuts figure out how to tell us?
I have somebody here. We're going to go down to the audience. We're going to go get him right away. This guy seemed very confident. Okay.
Careful,
sir,
Paul. Careful.
I saw, sir.
Careful, Paul. Yes.
First, tell me your name.
Paul, hold on
to the
mic.
My name is Clark.
This is Clark. Clark, explain
Clark,
to
ask
us.
Ask him if he's Superman. Take the glasses off.
Take your glasses off.
I'll take the glasses off.
Oh, he is! Clark, tell us what Deadfall means.
A Deadfall is a type of trap in which a heavy object is triggered to catch and maybe kill or capture your prey.
Whoa.
Okay.
Way to go, okay. Clark.
Wait, did you retain anything?
Way to go.
A heavy trap.
That kind of makes sense.
Like a bear trap?
So it would be like if you set like a tree.
He said no.
It would be like if you set a tree up to like this and somebody were to follow through, the tree would fall down and kill an animal.
It's like a killing trap.
It's a killing trap. Like I'm assuming if you're hunting or something.
Does that make sense for your deadfall?
That's a tree fall. And
no, you would set it up. Like a human being would set it up to do it when triggered. Purposeful.
But more accurately, that name seems better. I don't know. As he was describing it, I was just zoning out. I can't, like...
It was hard.
I can't retain that kind of a definition.
Because it's hard to think of, like, well, so what is an example of a deadfall?
Clark?
A tree.
Go back to Clark for a second. He seems...
Our expert.
Clark, I'm already giving Clark a lot of credit because, first of all, he was so succinct. He was right on it, and we're still having trouble with it. It's not your fault. It's our fault. All right, yes.
Well, I think Wile E. Coyote uses that device quite a bit. Use a heavy rock.
A lot of happy people.
Highbrow.
And then attached to a rope that you pull when you see your prey.
Got it. So, so he was saying, like, the Wile E. Coyote Roadrunner traps... Again, a beautiful description, a heavy rock with a small twig, you pull the thing and the rock falls in. So it's a kill trap.
Is that the only definition?
Does someone have a different definition?
Is there another example? Is there another example?
I'm gonna predict this right now. We will not talk about this movie. We will finish this podcast. You will listen to 9 ads for Blue Apron. And we will only talk about the fucking title. How did this get titled, episode 1?
The taglines of this movie were, ... the ultimate con.
It starts with an ellipsis?
Yep.
Nope.
Because
that presumes that something was the first half of that sentence.
Nope. ... the ultimate con. And the second tagline was...
How about it? What if it was just like, James Caan, ... the ultimate con.
The other one was, you won't know who to trust, ... what to believe, ... or where to run, period. Let's talk about trivia. This movie was written by the writer of Green Book. Nick Vallelonga. When I saw his name on the screen, I bolted out of bed. He also plays one of the workers in the pizza coffee shop place as well.
Wow.
And Nick Vallelonga, his father is Tony Lip, the man that Viggo Mortensen played in Green Book. So this is a precursor to Green Book.
Wow. Wow, which one's better?
Nick Vallelonga also wrote a movie called In the Kingdom of the Blind, The Man with One Eye is King, The Corporate Ladder, Choker.
This is all one title.
So yeah, this is an interesting look back at where his career started and where it went to and all that sort of stuff. This movie is amazing because it looks aggressively low budget. And I said to June, one of the things that really is really shocking to me, and I couldn't figure out why is this movie so weird, and it's because there's no production design. And I don't mean that visually, I mean it's sound design. It's deadly silent.
Yes.
And it's unnerving.
And you know where it's like most evident? In the sex scene. The sex scene was basically like slow people having sex who didn't turn any music on. It was like real weird.
Well, there was something. I felt like there was also a lot of ill-fitting underwear in this movie. Just like baggy undies and like.
Ooh, say it slower. Baggy undies.
I had a very bad reaction to her underwear, his underwear. Oh. I feel like I wish it would. I want the underwear to be either very tight or very loose. but it was so in
very loose.
I don't want to be very loose.
What's an example of you,
no big deal, guys? I wear some very loose underwear.
Take your pants off. What's going on?
Every other day you switch it up. Super.
I'm just like putting it in there with a spatula. Gotta get it pulled through the pants.
Paul takes his pants off and he's got incredible bloomers on, like so loose and big. Billowy underwear.
They're parachute. They're made out of a parachute.
If you look at Paul, it's just bunched up in his jeans.
I will say to put boxers.
3 yards of fabric.
I have to pull them through the bottom of my pants.
This is a conversation we get into a lot with our children, where I like their underwear to be tighter.
Yeah. And I say to June, you need to give them a little bit of space for all everything, you know.
But I'm like, doesn't it all need to be contained?
And I say no.
Doesn't it? Are you afraid they're gonna get loose?
I just want it to be like.
It's more with pajamas.
I want it to be like protected. And,
I mean, pajamas.
No,
you
pajamas,
like to put them in like a sausage casing pajama.
You know why? Though that is because if there were ever, God forbid, a fire, they are safer in very form-fitting pajamas.
But guess what?
They are. So
it's
they don't
not gonna be a fire.
They sleep in.
It's gonna be an earthquake.
Oh yeah.
That too, but
they sleep in wrestling singlets, right? Or scuba suits.
I'm actually concerned about it right now. Paul's purchased both of them pajamas that are loose. If they're running through a burning house, there's much more of a chance of
they're going to see a Paw Patrol, just Paw Patrol pajamas running, flappy Paw Patrol pajamas.
Well, like made of like fabric-based kerosene, I'm sure.
They all say non-flammable. I will say that there is something about seeing a man in boxers in a sex scene. When he goes to grab his junk out, it's like, ooh, I didn't like it.
I didn't like
boxers. Just be bare-assed or, like you said, wear jockeys or something.
We see his hairy ass crack in this movie, and I was like, what is this? Could you... It's like a straight down the chute.
Yes, I was actually... I commend Coppola for that one.
Yes. Chris Coppola.
It went up, yeah.
Yes,
whichever.
Chris Coppola, Nicolas Cage's brother.
It went kind of down into his butt crack, and then it like went back like that.
It was like, it just almost did it just to be like, in case you're wondering what's doing inside his butt crack, here's a peek.
Let's zoom you in there.
Hey, sexy dingleberry alert. Like, this was a wild moment.
And she reached into his pants.
Oh, you're right. That's what it was.
She reached. I remember that shot because, again, it was sort of evocative for me. And she reached in there and grabbed it.
She reached in like you would be reaching into like some sort of like prize chest. Like, what am I going to get? Got to go deeper at the bottom. like as if there were other dicks that you'd pass around. Not going to grab. Nope. Yeah. That's the one. That's the one I want.
It was like, that's what happens inside a billowy underwear.
That's why I'm saying keep it tight, keep it together, know what you're gonna get.
But this movie did definitely have too much boob. I said TMB. I mean, the boob.
Too much boob?
Too much boob.
Beg to differ. But, I mean, that's
fine. Boo. I just felt like it was like gratuitous and not sexy. It was just sort of like, almost like an art class.
Well, I thought she was kind of funny across the board like that because she kind of looks like the girl next door or something, right. But she's acting like the most beautiful woman alive. Like she's always in like a hat, just like no one likes this.
What was hard for me was this movie is, and we've not really described what the movie is at all, which I love, by the way. But this is like the archetype is a classic film noir. He is a, you know, where the femme fatale seduces the guy, the guy into falling into a trap and blah, blah, blah.
Like Double Indemnity.
Did you watch it on?
It's almost, but.
One of the greatest movies, 100 greatest movies.
Really?
Yeah, on the AFI top list, yeah.
Wow. You see how I'm here talking, June? June, can I talk to you for a second?
I'm
here talking about classic film noir, the archetypes of the form. You know, and he just comes in with some unspooled bullshit.
It's honestly, it's aggressive. At this Amy, point, go ahead. It's aggressive.
Amy, just let, what did you say,
no,
Amy?
No, this isn't that show.
I'm sorry, what?
Did you just call June Amy?
I'm so sorry, guys. I'm so sorry.
And so the archetype dictates that there be a femme fatale to seduce the kind of the guy, and their chemistry is a straight zero. Like, there is nothing compelling about their chemistry, even remotely.
But she just seems so young, and there's nothing, like, womanly about her. There's nothing actually seductive about her.
She doesn't seem like a femme fatale.
Yes.
She seems like a person who has access to a femme fatale's closet, right, but is not the femme fatale.
Yeah, she's playing dress-up.
Yeah, she's like,
that.
Ooh, that hat.
Yeah.
She's like a woman who, like, every Halloween is a femme fatale.
Well, this whole movie is costumed like... It was like, the theme is gangster. Like even that guy who comes out at the pool hall of Charlie Sheen, who's like wearing like a black undershirt and like with a cell phone on the side. It looks like everyone's doing their best. Like, I don't have that much at home. I think this is gangster. Yeah, it's gangster. It's gangster. You're gangster.
The idea that you said, and I did not know this, that this was directed by Nicolas Cage's brother makes so much sense as to why Nicolas Cage is allowed to do what he's doing.
Well, Jason, just to kind of put a little bit of a change of your mind here, he came to set, Nick Cage, dressed in a wig, albino contacts, and sunglasses because he thought it would add authenticity to the character, and then his brother told him you could not dress however you want for the part. We have people for that.
Wow.
But it seems like his brother lost a large part of it.
This is what they settled on?
This was the scaled back version.
This is the version they could agree would be put to film?
This is the compromise. Yeah.
I will say, too, to go back to the femme fatale lead actor role, at one point when I was watching, I was like, man, this guy reminds me of the guy from Terminator. And they go, oh,
it is
the guy from Terminator.
Michael Biehn is like, he's in Aliens. He's in so many great movies of this time period. And but I love him. I love him in this era. And he's such a great, I think he's such a great face for this period of movies that I'm like, oh, I feel like I never got more of Michael Biehn. I want more Michael Biehn.
But I did not want more Michael
Biehn. I'm all set.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, I want Michael Biehn in those movies. The original actors were Val Kilmer and Joanna Whaley.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they pulled out right before the movie started shooting. So these two were real last-minute replacements.
Wow.
See, pulling out really does offer protection.
Hey everybody, we have to take a brief break in the show to hear a word from our sponsors. Our first sponsors is us. That's right. We're making cool t-shirts. Every stop of the tour, there's a different shirt attached to each individual show. Plus, we have amazing designs from previous shows as well. Head on over to tpublic.com/stores/hdtgm to see what we got in the store for you. And if you come out to one of our live shows, make sure you get the shirt associated to your live show. We're making them live on the spot. It's so much fun. But people, let me tell you about something that I really love. It's Squarespace. I've made multiple websites with Squarespace. PaulShear.com, made it with what? Squarespace. UnspooledPod.com, made it with what? Squarespace. CrashTestShow.com, what did I make it with? You guessed it, Squarespace. How did this get made? HDTGMinfo.com, what did I make it with? Squarespace. Why? Because they make it easier than ever to launch your passion project. And these are my passion projects, me and all of my podcasts and all the shows. I love to do websites, people. Anyway, if you're looking to start a new business, showcase your work, publish content, sell products, and more, Squarespace is the tool for you with beautiful templates created by world-class designers and the ability to customize just about anything with a few clicks. You can easily make a beautiful website yourself. Why am I forcing you to make a website? Because if you don't have presence on the web, you're nothing. You're nobody. You're no good, okay? We all know the first thing we do when we hear someone's name that we don't know is we Google it. So get in front of it. Start the narrative. Create the story. Be the person you want to be, and Squarespace will help you sell your stuff, too. If you want to, you know, sell your cool t-shirts, you can do that. Go to Squarespace. They have this beautiful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything online, and analytics to help you grow in real time. Everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box, and there's nothing to patch or upgrade ever. Buying domains is simple, believe me, I know, and you'll get the help you need with Squarespace's 24/7 award-winning customer support. Squarespace empowers millions of people, from designers to lawyers to artists to gamers, even restaurants and gyms, to turn great ideas into something real. So head to squarespace.com/bonkers for a free trial. That's squarespace.com/bonkers for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code BONKERS to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/bonkers. Offer code BONKERS. People, let me tell you about a movie that I absolutely love. It's directed by one of my good friends, Lynn Shelton. You know her from films like Hump Day and Your Sister's Sister. And now she's doing this all-out hilarious comedy starring Marc Maron called Sword of Trust. It's about a pawn shop owner who comes in possession of a sword that, to a network of deranged conspiracy theorists, proved that the South really won the Civil War. It's really, really good. And what I love about Lynn is that she has a great script, but then she kind of populates the entire world with these amazing improv comics, including Jillian Bell, Michaela Watkins, John Bass, Toby Huss, and Dan Bacadal, who you know from Veep. Hilarious people. So many good performances here. People are saying that Marc Maron gives his best on-screen performance to date. And that's just not Marc Maron saying that. That's actually critics are saying that. And people are saying that he delivers this monologue that is one of the best in film. One of the best in film. I think you're going to love this film. If you like independent film, if you like independent comedy, if you like all those people I just mentioned, I think Jillian Bell is one of the most hilarious people. I think Michaela Watkins is just outstandingly funny. You will love this movie. Sword of Trust is now in theaters or on demand. And you can actually look around and see where Lynn and Mark might be popping up, because they're at select screenings talking about the movie afterwards. Visit swordoftrust.com for details. That's swordoftrust.com for details.
I know we're jumping around, but since we were talking about the sex scene, can I just play the post-coital scene? Because this is one of the most disturbing revelations of the film, when she asks about the locket.
What was she like? The girl in the locket?
I barely remember.
So why do you carry it then?
It's just kind of a reminder, I guess.
Of what?
Things we're still looking for.
Like?
Like I lied to you. It's not an old girlfriend. It's my mother.
Not an old girlfriend. It's my mom.
There is, in this scene, there is no score. There's not a song. There's nothing.
No,
it exists
sound.
In a void.
There's no, like, street noise.
Nothing.
Like, something going
no
by.
Birds.
There's no walla walla.
Nope, yeah.
A car honk.
Nothing.
It's deadly silent. It's as silent as that void, that black void that they had sex in. Because they're in a hotel room, and then it's just a black void. And like,
it's like in Under the Skin, where
yes,
Scarlett Johansson puts everybody. This movie takes place in that liquid.
I want to show you that movie, June.
I'm scared.
I would like to be there to watch June watch that movie.
No, but it's so weird that no sound design. All right, so the movie starts off. Michael Biehn is in...
Sorry, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
So what... Is there another person in the locket, or he just has a locket with just one picture?
Mother.
That's weird. Also, what did happen to his mother?
And do men wear lockets? Not to make it heteronormative, but it doesn't seem like...
That's so funny. That never even crossed my mind. Like, in this complete shitstorm of incoherent details, I didn't even think of that.
And then he takes it off before sex. Like, hold on.
But but props it up open so mom can watch him fuck. He's like, I want my mommy to watch us fuck. I didn't know her, so it's not that weird. This gets me off. Also, I felt like it is strange to have an... There is a sadness to a locket that has two sides and only one side is full.
Yes.
Maybe she
yes.
would be the other person.
It's like wearing a B-Fry Stuttens, best friend's locket and being like, well, I don't know who has the other half.
Absolutely. So he's walking around with a heart-shaped locket around his neck.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
It's funny to me that he thinks it's more awkward to say it's his mom than to say it's another girl.
Really? Here.
Like, well, it's better, oh, I'm memorializing my mom. She died. No, he's hiding that by being like, it's a girlfriend that I carry a locket of all the time.
Or, but hear me out. It's also like, it's my mommy that I wear on my heart.
It's pretty weird.
But if you're, like, trying to get involved with someone, you'd take that. I mean, they both suck, but
both
you'd take
that.
Both
are red flags.
Yeah, they're huge, huge red flags.
I mean, good thing that she doesn't have much of a sensibility because she's dating Nick Cage when we meet her, so I think her bar is set very low. And just to get into Nick Cage in this world, Nick Cage in this movie, wow. I mean...
It's kind of like there's not... I think the tough thing about it is just like, what do you say? You know, what
I do
you say?
I know what to say.
Okay.
Phenomenal. No, I feel like his performance feels like, you know when you're shooting something, you guys know, and like, it's like between takes, you're joking around with the other actors. You're like, ooh, see my line like this. And then he actually did it.
I feel like he was like, hey, do you dare me to do this whole movie as Tony Clifton?
Yes, I wrote that down. I was
like, do you dare me to do this whole movie as Tony Clifton? I will do it. It's half Tony Clifton, half Al Pacino's Scarface. Like, I don't know what he's up to, but I'm obsessed with it. It's not in, it doesn't belong in this, it's from another movie.
And it's all through clenched teeth. Oh, look at you over here. Let's go. It's like, it's not easy.
Also, like, why does he need a prosthetic nose? Like, there's no reason. Is there? Does it come into play in any way?
I think it came
it's
with the glasses.
Tough, like, is his... is his character an insane person?
Like, yes.
Yes, but... It doesn't seem like the world is reacting to him like, oh, there's a nut. There's a mentally unstable and person in our midst. Like, we have to all be quite cautious.
Oh, arguably, if I'm L.A. James Coburn, right?
Yes,
the uncle. If I'm Uncle Lou or whatever, the idea that this is your right-hand man means you're bad at being a gangster. Because he is
unwell.
He is, like, everybody is so subtle, including the monkeys, Mickey Dolenz. Shouts to Mickey Dolenz from the monkeys who's in there. Everybody's doing
such... As a pretzel salesman, they seemingly, this mafia owns a block, and everyone that is in the block is part of this, like, weird conman mafia, but... Are they just conning themselves all day?
No, it's like, they're running numbers. They're running. Okay. They're taking bets on like a neighborhood lottery, basically.
Okay,
they're numbers runners, or whatever. In what looked to me like the farmer's market.
Yes.
Such a
on
small
Fairfax,
area.
Which was very strange. But like, Nicolas, like, they're all doing such a good job of being subtle about the crime they're committing. And Nicolas Cage is literally enormous. He's dressed insanely. He's screaming all of his lines. Everything. I mean, if you did not watch the movie, I'm certain there's some compilation of his scenes.
Well, I mean, you have to find it. Here's a little taste of Nick in the Nick in the bar. Here we go.
What's your problem, boy? I thought we were settled.
Well, we are that, baby. There's nothing to worry about.
What the hell you bothering me for?
Well, baby's a little cranky tonight, huh?
Yeah. I don't dig looking at your ugly face. Now, your partner, he was a cool dude.
Cool enough to get that baby to burp up 1,500?
I didn't pay him jack shit. He told me all I had to do was just walk outside with him, shake his hand, and I was even.
Are you telling me that was his fucking money?
Somebody's after your job, boy. I bet he even stole your woman. Fucking shut my back!
I picked that scene because literally every line is a different voice.
Yep. Different voice. That's that. Let me be clear. That's the only take they could use. However many takes they did, they were like, this is the only one. This is the one that makes the most sense, I guess.
Excuse me, Nick, I know we're brothers, but can you not throw water in the face of the extras without telling them? And also don't punch an extra too, because in a second later, he just punches a guy in the stomach, and I feel like no one was aware of any of that.
It is, he's basically in the middle of a noir, like a seedy noir riff, a terrible seedy noir riff. He's basically doing a Commedia dell'arte character. He's playing like a clown.
Yeah, he's stated like you are in Commedia, like you're just angry, you're just sad. He's fully stated the entire movie.
I love though the commitment to it, because no one else is doing this. Like, no, like, it's not like, it's so big.
Can you imagine being in a scene with this?
Well, that's sort of what I'm saying. Like, I genuinely think, I don't think he thought this was gonna be a good movie. I think he sort of is like, my brother sucks. and I'm just gonna have fun. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
do you think he thought this was a well-conceived...
Chelsea, I would agree with you.
Except?
He made a sequel to this movie. Nicolas Cage took this character and made a sequel in 2017.
What? What are you talking about?
They love it.
What?
What? My God.
What are you talking about? Is it called Deadfall 2? The Rise of Eddie?
Let me see.
Oh my god.
Okay. So this movie comes out in 1993, and 2017, Nicolas Cage brings back Eddie with a very interesting grouping of people. Bear with it because he comes in a little bit later, but here we go. It's worth it.
You know, Mike, I have a job for you if you want it.
We're brothers. Don't worry about me.
Listen, I need to talk to you about Mikey.
It's always something.
Is it true what I heard? You bought some coke and you wanted to flip it?
What do you want me to say?
So you're a drug dealer now.
Bring my coke, huh? Where is it?
Your brother's always getting into trouble.
It's Mikey. I owe everything to him.
I figure we're even.
Oh, you think we're even, you and I?
I know of a way where we can both earn what we deserve.
There's no amount of money that I would do that for.
You owe me! You owe me!
He's gonna get himself killed.
Mikey, you have a daughter. I'm not perfect like you.
She's been hanging out with these meth head losers.
What would you know?
We raise the stakes.
Threatening to hurt my niece.
You make sure that you bring the money, and we'll call it even.
I gotta put together 350 grand.
You sure you wanna do this?
They're gonna kill her. What do I do?
You gotta face it. The police aren't gonna help you here.
The cops aren't gonna stop it. Somebody has to.
Look at me. Are you lying to me?
Don't lie to me.
You lost your mind.
They're gonna kill you both.
Tomorrow, money in a suitcase.
I'll have the money. We're gonna kill them.
I got no problem with that.
We'll be right back.
And again, like a what looks like a gritty crime thriller with a cartoon character, with Tony Clifton in the middle of it.
By the way, how would it even exist in this
how
movie?
How would he ever survive the deep fryer death?
Right.
With no scar.
No.
Here's the challenge.
It looks...
Make the third movie.
This is not even 2 years old.
My question was, ultimately, who is that?
Yeah, yeah.
Who is, like, in the bus, when Michael Biehn is taking the bus, we rack focus to this guy.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, obviously that guy's part of the story.
Yeah.
And then here he is again, and he gets killed outside, and did anybody ever tell me where and why the beard guy was involved? Right?
I understood it as there was an ad backstage that says if you had a fake beard, a fake wig, a tick, or a voice, you could just show up and you get a
part. And be in the movie. Like, I genuinely did not know.
That's the thing. I'm assuming that the uncle must have hired him. Or did his dad hire him?
His dad probably hired him to keep an eye on him.
Oh, was the dad trying to, using this guy? Okay, I get it. James Coburn, the dad, hired Fake Beard to kill Nick Cage because Nick Cage might kill Michael Biehn.
Oh, got it.
Right?
But
that's got to be it, because he probably wanted to protect his son within the dangerous situation he was putting his son in without his son's knowledge, mm-hmm. and saw Nicolas Cage as so erratic as to be potentially a threat to the son, which Nicolas Cage was already starting to assume that Michael Biehn was trying to kill him, right? I don't know.
That makes
Can
sense.
Can anyone up here take a stab at just what ultimately from beginning to end the con was?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I
like
think...
Like, beginning to end. Like, the beginning of the movie.
Yes. So he, basically,
the dad fakes his death,
that the son will go find his brother, and then the son will start working for the brother to get involved in this big diamond con, and then...
And how would the dad know that?
It's a leap of faith.
It's a real
Wait,
leap.
Was the dad... Did the dad set that up?
Yeah.
Did the dad
the set, diamond?
Did the dad set the diamond deal in motion with Harry Houdini or whatever? Harry.
Wait, the first one or the second diamond one?
So you have James Coburn, the dad, right? And in the opening scene, Michael Biehn thinks he's killed him, and everybody goes their separate ways. Okay, Peter Fonda, everybody else, right?
He also walks out with, doesn't he walk out with...
Money.
And
Peter Fonda does say to him, like, your dad wants you to get the cake.
Yeah.
So that's
And his dad's dying words were, go to my brother, get the cake, or...
Yeah, so that's how...
Yes. Whatever.
Like, of all this, I just heard cake.
Yes. Agree.
The whole movie, I was just like, cake.
And it really was like, and the cake, I guess again, like a noir-y way, I guess the cake is like, contains a thing, like the Maltese Falcon contains
I thought the cake
a
was
thing.
Just a, I feel like that a cake is the term
what the
for
ring
a diamond.
Is in. No, the engagement ring for the shared woman that they loved. Right?
That's the cake?
It was in a case.
Oh, right.
It was
yes.
in a cake. Sorry.
The box. Twisted it.
The box was a cake.
Okay. Why would you give somebody an engagement ring in a wedding cake?
Yeah, it's confusing.
The weird thing is it's
the cart before the horse.
It's not supposed to look like an actual cake. It's just this weird figurine, this weird cake figurine.
And correct me if I'm wrong.
Right?
I thought it was supposed to look like a cake.
Well, it... it looks like a cake, but it's like a Precious Moments figurine or something. It doesn't...
No, it looks like... Yeah.
It doesn't actually look like a cake.
Oh, it does, though.
Wait, what do you mean it
you
doesn't
mean
look like a cake?
You mean just the scale. The scale.
Thank you. If you saw it, you would not eat it.
Right.
Oh, no. It's in the shape of a cake. It's not like realistically a cake.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but it's in the shape of a cake.
It's like a mini cake.
Right, but I don't understand what world are we in which you're handing someone that.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, you're proposing...
If you're proposing and want to do a fun bit around, like, here's your dessert,
It would have to look like a real,
like something.
Yes, yes.
You would actually.
Otherwise, she's like, what are you
doing?
Oh, wait,
are you presuming that the reason it looks like a cake is because it was delivered during the dessert course of a meal?
Why else would this engagement ring be?
I thought it was just like a fancy ring box
in
the shape of a cake.
The actual cake was delicious.
Also,
this was the actual cake that was delivered.
They went all out on that one.
Like they didn't even go to the store to buy a cake from Gelson's. Someone in the back just slapped some stuff together.
To be fair, that does look like the cake that woman character would have made.
Absolutely. I thought it was a great choice.
By the way, it looks delicious.
It looks so milky. By the way, I will say, what an odd birthday. Ham in the afternoon.
Disgusting.
Disgusting. A giant ham. Afternoon ham. Come over for some afternoon ham and cake. Ugh.
Gross.
Can I ask a question, too? Wasn't the engagement ring inside red?
Yes.
Was it a giant ruby? Is that what we're to believe?
And
that
wasn't
he is proposing
the cake brown?
What's that?
Yeah, the cake itself was brown, like an odd choice.
Unfrosted wedding cake.
Yeah, like it should have at least been white.
Yeah, put some fondant on that.
Okay, nailed it.
But I mean, there is so much going on. I think the con is, go work for my brother, and then we'll get all that money from him, because at the end they get that suitcase full of money. And he gives it to everybody. Everyone seems to get a small stack, and then they keep the giant suitcase together. He's like, we split it.
Right, but I guess my question is,
right,
why set him up to do that? Is there no other person? I just wasn't quite understanding.
I think
it felt like a long road.
I suspect it was the presumption that James Coburn, the uncle, would probably welcome his nephew into his trust rather than if he tried to get Peter Fonda to go and get involved in James Coburn, the uncle's gang.
So do you think, though, that there's any world in which he could have done that without faking his own death?
Yeah. If he trusted his son. But he basically used...
Like,
he basically played his son.
Why not bring him into it?
Yeah. He didn't trust him.
That's it?
Well, I assume so.
I think he did trust him, but he needed to make the son really mournful because who knows who's watching him?
He also set him up with the woman.
So he didn't trust his acting.
Yes.
Yes.
By the way, can we talk about the best performance of the film? That opening scene where they're doing the coke deal. Whoever's buying the cocaine is scooping it like that woman scoops dicks out of boxers. It is like, I've never seen anyone taste cocaine like, blah, blah, blah. Like, he's throwing it in his mouth like
I can see angels. I can see angels. Isn't it Michael Constantine?
Is it? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's Michael Constantine, the father from My Big Fat Greek Wedding. As well as a million other great things.
He sucks in that cocaine. Here, it's like him just shoveling.
Almost as if it perhaps is real cocaine. Mm.
Just two fingers in his mouth.
Also, two things. Hey, Chris, I'm so sorry. We did not get lights. We have two flashlights. All right. Point one at each guy. We'll see what we can get.
He thought it was film noir. You don't need lights. It's supposed to be dark. We haven't even gotten to...
So much. I can't believe what time it is.
I know. We maybe shouldn't have spent 20 minutes on the title.
The title, the cake.
Okay, and I'm sorry to spend one more minute on the cake, but I have to.
Can we find a picture of it?
Yeah, find a picture of the cake, and I may need to see the cake scene.
I don't know if I can.
That's a big ass. Order.
Okay, don't worry about it, but... I want a consensus up here at least. So we all think that the cake was the presentation of an engagement ring.
Correct.
Wow. That's so crazy. So in that presentation, he's just thinking like, oh, here's your engagement ring box, which is in a cake.
I think James Coburn might have done one of these. And opened the cake.
No, he couldn't. It's a screw top.
It was?
Yeah, he screwed it. I noticed because I felt like the actor screwed it too much when he was screwing
it. So was he trying to hide it in the office so it was just, it wouldn't look like an engagement ring box? Because I would walk over to it.
It was in a safe.
This is like when a director's directing a scene and the actor's like, I have to ask another question box that I'm so, I'm
and
just.
Why do I have to know about the cake box? Like, what is it to me?
And if it's in the safe, why does it need to be in the cake box? Couldn't it just be in a,
The thing seems to be that James Coburn, the uncle, had the cake box and the ring made for the woman that James Coburn, the father, then stole? Is that right?
Right, because at one point, James Coburn, the uncle, says, you could have been my son.
Which isn't
weird.
How it works.
That's not how it works.
At all.
That's not how that works. And keep in mind, that woman fucked twin brothers.
And by the way, they had James Coburn, but yet that picture is the most Photoshop picture I've ever seen. It looks like one picture is taken in the 70s and one picture is taken in the late 80s. And both of the people who were in that picture were not looking at the camera. They're like veering off to the side.
I thought he was pretty hot as the uncle.
Oh, Uncle Lou, yeah.
The white hair?
Yep.
Yeah.
The white hair looked great on him.
Yeah, it was better than the dark.
And
for sure.
It was like California was treating Uncle Lou well.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And
Uncle Lou had found love. They were going to Tahiti. He had it made.
Uncle Lou, though, spends a long period of time, because I get what they're trying to do, not reveal his face, not reveal he's a twin. Although that's a big hole that your dad would never say, oh, yeah, my brother and I are twins. But whatever. So they have to hide his face. So he's like looking out the window for an exorbitantly long period of time. There's nothing going on. He's like, so I'm glad you're here. And think that would be cool if we could talk about some stuff. And anyway, boom,
bum,
check
bum,
it out.
And that's where like there would be like a music sting to tell you
nothing.
Something had happened, but it's just empty. It is the vacuum of space.
Do you think there's any way he actually is his son?
Wow, a lot of agreement, June.
Okay, I'll go down this road.
Because at the very end...
So you think when she left with the father, she might have already been pregnant from Uncle Lou and...
Potentially. Because there's a moment at the end when the carousel is going round and he's sort of like trying to figure out his relationship to his dad, and it felt like the world was spinning.
Yeah.
And especially because he said, you could have been my son. Well, there's no way he could be his son unless he actually could have been his son.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. So he was right. If she stayed with me, you would have been my
And what's
son.
Interesting is that the movie creates a more compelling connection between Michael Biehn and Uncle Lou. Uncle Lou's like, come to Tahiti with us. Come live with us. Come be with us. Be a family or whatever.
On Uncle Lou's ticket that just says one way.
Yeah,
I've never seen a ticket printed one way.
And then his father comes in, kills Uncle Lou, and is like, fuck you. And his dad's basically like a full-on piece of shit.
Yeah. And his hair is like just hastily darkened with shoe polish.
Again.
It's like glistening. It's glistening.
Got invited to the gangster party. It's like, I really don't have anything. And he was like, I'll put some shoe polish in my hair. That's gangster, right?
It's vampire like everybody gangster. Got dressed from the Tim Robinson sketch where he's got all those mafia pieces for that party.
What about Charlie Sheen... as the pool hustler, Fats.
I was like, okay, here we go.
Yet another person that's revealed, like we said earlier, that every
What's his
scene...
What's character's name?
His name is... They call him Fats, but his name is Morgan Grip.
Morgan Grip.
I was imagining him having to rehearse that line. You can call me Fats. What?
What?
Hang
sausage.
On.
Sausage.
Hang on.
Sausage.
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 Sausage. Sausage.
Sausage. Sausage.
Sausage. Sausage. Sausage.
Why are we saying sausage?
What Clark, is it? Do you know why they're saying sausage?
Oh, his assistant is called sausage?
Oh, got it.
Has this been worth it? Aren't you glad you ground this to a full halt just so we could figure it out? Was this a satisfying part of the podcast? I hate you.
So, Charlie Sheen's introduced.
Morgan Grip.
I don't even really understand where he falls into the world ultimately, but I really do think what I'd like to play is his monologue about Mark Twain, which we talked about a little bit, but here we go. Oh, by the way, when they're playing this pool scene, none of these shots are impressive to me, and I don't think that the never do you see like a ball go in.
No.
Oh, they're not playing oh, they're pool playing... in pockets. They're playing like snooker or whatever.
Okay.
Not snooker. What's it called? What is it?
Billiards? Or
Sausage.
They're playing sausage. No, they're just playing a different pool game that doesn't have pockets.
Okay, well, they're playing a pool, right, because he does reveal that table without the...
I didn't know there were pool games without pockets.
Seems like there's no payoff.
Each time you have to hit, like, both balls or something.
That's
like, you have to, like...
so lame.
You also need to explain that to the audience. Like, hey, the thing that you're so familiar with, it would be like if you did a bowling scene, but it was like, no, but you never put the ball on the alley. Because I was like, what am I watching here?
No, it's just like the bowling we know, but there's no pins.
Yeah.
You just roll a ball down a lane. And a score is given because it's all geometry.
I think this is the Mark Twain moment here.
This was Sam's game. Samuel Langhorne Clemens. You know, Mark Twain. The genius behind Huck Finn, Tom Sawyer, personal favorite of mine, a Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's court. He used to play whenever he had writer's block. Said it was good for the brain.
And end of monologue.
And we never see him make a shot in the scene.
Nope.
Like, we never see him and shot in the same, and the pool shot in the same camera shot.
Wait, by the way,
but what would the shot mean if we don't know even what the game is?
I guess that's true.
By the way, I just think it's funny to refer to an author as the genius behind, because... It's like you can say that, but like when you see it, something where you don't, where the genius is not certainly clear, it's like, oh yeah, he's the genius behind that movie. But you know the author of the book.
From wasn't the like, guy that brought you, Tom Sawyer, and the guy behind Huck Finn.
Behind Huck Finn leads you to believe that there are other people that also like executed it as well.
That's the only scene with any music in the background.
Yeah.
It shocked me.
Oh, my gosh. And then Charlie Sheen works for a man who has a lobster claw for a hand.
What was this? That guy, here's the thing. That guy and Nicolas Cage are in the same movie.
That's true.
These guys are in a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead other movie somewhere where they're fucking linked up. It's called Eddie and the Claw, and like
coming out 2020. Coming out 2020, they've both finally got the
finances. This is like a Dr. Evil setup right here.
Another guy shot in a black room. There's a lot of black rooms in this movie. We don't understand. Do we understand why he has the claw hand?
Nor does he ever really use it.
Just to
shake
touch
hands.
Things in a weird way. It's, yeah.
It's like he could use his other hand.
Yeah, but he's selfish and he doesn't want to learn how to use it.
But if you're going to give someone a claw for a hand and he never chops anything with it,
yeah,
what's the point? This is Chekhov's claw. Like, let's do this.
No.
I did think he was going to pick up a diamond with it, but he didn't use it to pick up the diamonds.
And also, for a man like this who appears to be a diamond buyer, seller, something like that, why does he need to have, like, a vicious claw?
I mean, we're in a world
Put a loop on the end so you can look at diamonds with your hand.
I mean...
That's your repetitive motion.
But...
Right, you're saying if there's nothing there... If you don't have a hand,
if you have no hand, ironically, He never chops a hand off, but I guess
his hand... So you're
saying
just put like a giant magnifying glass
yes.
on it?
Yes, I mean, yeah. that's part... That's right, the thing he uses the most.
Because when he has to look through the loop, his partner or his henchman has to hold the loop up to his eyes.
Yes.
And he's got to like...
Because to do his work, his claw hand is obsolete.
It's a metaphor for the movie plot, like overcomplicated, unnecessary.
But we've all been in that thing where your doctor says, hey, you lost your hand, you want the claw hand, and you think, that would be so cool. And the only when you get home, you're like, oh, I should have just gone for the normal hand.
Yeah, guaranteed, this is one of those scenarios where in the middle of the night, you're half asleep, you full on chop your own dick off. Because you just go to hold it with the wrong hand, and it's like, chop, 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 see you later.
Oh my gosh. This scene leads into my favorite scene of the movie, which is the gangsters getting ready around a table as the camera spins. And holy shit, you want to talk about some acting. Every actor, when that camera's on them, they are giving, they are
everything.
Like,
everything. They're giving their
this
lives.
This is it.
They're giving their whole lives.
That scene, I mean, that scene was masterful.
Why does that woman have two long nails?
They
look
like
right?
Coke nails.
They're probably for head
nail.
Scratching.
Yeah. I guess I've never seen cocaine nails. I've never seen
Charlie
two
Sheen
together.
Had it too.
Isn't it just you have one cocaine nail? I mean, I
maybe one is for like. Maybe it's like one is for cocaine and one is for some other snortable drug.
Or what if, you know, she gets her hand chopped off, like her boyfriend, and she's like, shit, I want to get a claw hand, but I also don't want to stop doing cocaine, so it's already ready to go.
I know what it is. I bet all the nails were that long, but her boyfriend chopped off a bunch of them accidentally.
Today's show is also brought to you by Allbirds Tree Runners. They're comfy shoes, they're made from trees, and they're the perfect shoe for all of your summer travel adventures. I love my tree runners because they're just so light and breezy and outstandingly comfy. It's almost like your toes are in a hammock, and the hammock is being cradled by marshmallows, and it's being just dragged along the beach. Oh, it's so perfect. It's like you're putting your foot in a permanent first class, right? It's like normal shoes, that's like flying the back of the plane coach. Putting on Allbirds, first class all the way, baby, and my toes are drinking champagne! Anyway, Allbirds Tree Runners come in a bunch of classic and limited edition colors, and they're designed simply with no unnecessary logos, which means they go with any outfit, so throw them in your bag, you can pack lighter and travel farther. Plus, Allbirds are so comfortable, they'll keep you feeling good the whole way to your destination. Whether you get upgraded to business or end up in the middle seat, you will not care, because you're wearing Allbirds, and Allbirds are already making your feet feel like they're on a vacation, no matter what seat you're in. And what I love about them is no matter how much you do in a day, your feet are still going to be smiling at the end of it, because Allbirds are not only comfy, they're supportive. Allbirds Tree Runners are your perfect summer travel companion. Head to allbirds.com to get your very own pair. Allbirds Tree Runners, my favorite shoe that I've ever worn. Allbirds.com. Check them out. And our final sponsor today is Starbucks Triple Shot Energy. Pow, 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 pow. Starbucks Triple Shot Energy has 225 milligrams of caffeine from Starbucks coffee, a hint of flavor enhanced with guarana, B vitamins, and ginseng for the energy that you need to do everything that you need to do. Because let's face it, people, there's not enough hours in the day. Am I right? Can I get an amen? Can I get some people out there to say, Paul, it's okay to go to bed without finishing all the work you have to do? But I can't, people. I can't. I need the energy. I got to stay up. I got to watch more shitty movies. I got to watch more good movies. I got to write scripts. I got to memorize my lines. I got shit to do. But you know what? How do I do it? How do I get through it? Starbucks Triple Energy Shot, okay? And it's available in three delicious flavors, including French vanilla, cafe mocha, and caramel. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. Here's what I love about the Triple Shot. Say you're going out And you want to pregame a little bit. You want to pregame with a triple shot because they're going to give you the energy to stay out later, longer, and have even more fun. Or if you're like me and you have kids and you wake up in the morning and if it's like 6 a.m., you want to open up that fridge. You want to drink some Starbucks triple shot energy because then you got to take your kid to that skateboarding lesson and it's 20 minutes away and you're just going to sit there. So you need a little pep in your step. It has helped me. It has helped my friends. People, I'm getting you on board the Starbucks triple shot energy train. Woo, woo. But when that train, when you drink it, it sounds like this. Fuck yeah. Anyway, find it in your local grocery store or convenience store. Starbucks triple shot energy. Go get it. All right, now back to our show.
Oh my gosh.
This is like this is wow. This was a wow. This was a wild ride, this movie. I enjoyed the abject nonsense of this trash.
What's crazy is the other Deadfall. The central relationship has a theme of incest, and it still had a lot more dignity.
Mm. Now we have to do it, because that seems to be a theme in a lot of our movies.
Can I ask, Chelsea, what is the Deadfall in the other movie?
No idea.
No
the
idea.
Trees?
No.
Probably trees.
Much like this one, I was tuned out for much of it.
Let's go to the crowd. Let's see what you all have to say about this movie. All right. I'm going to ask you all to do it in your best Nicolas Cage in Deadfall voice. I won't take a no. You got to present. And look, just, you know, Nicolas Cage just gives an A for effort. That's all we're looking for. A for effort. All right. So this person, it has a question. I don't know if it's going to be good. All right, here we go.
Oh boy.
This is my spidey sense of doing this show live a bunch of times. Ma'am, your name and the best Nick Cage, and then your question.
My name is Annabelle. Bullshit. Bullshit. Any hoodles, my question is for you, darling June. The murder scene in the vat of boiling oil is so violent and so disgusting. How did you, like, justify that in your, like, brains? I don't know. That was so gross and horrible. Like, wasn't
was
that
gross.
Scary to everybody? And he ripped the wig off first. Like, why?
Yeah.
Like, why did that happen? And, like, did he ingest the boiling
These
oil into his throat?
These are all things that happened
like,
in
so
the movie.
Like, it's so scary.
These are all things that
My spider
happened.
Sense is never wrong. Up to the balcony.
I don't know. I found that scene to be erotic.
Oh. That's so concerning.
All right, I am
Paul,
up
be
in
careful.
The
be
balcony.
Be careful up there.
Where? Oh, right there.
Please
Look at
be
this.
Careful.
Great. Front row here in the balcony. All right, sir, your name and the best Nick Cage voice and your question. Let's go. Come on down to me.
Hi, my name's Casey. Impression's gonna be really bad, but yeah, we are secret protectors. No.
What's happening? I'm walking away. Paul? I'm walking away. I'm so confused.
Just Forget be careful, Paul. Be
Forget
careful
about it, Paul.
Up there.
Forget
I thought
about
I was just out
balcony.
Of I thought I was just out of breath from running up all those stairs, but then I was like, this isn't making
Paul,
sense.
Paul, you gotta remember to be a little bit more, you gotta give him an eyeball.
Okay. We have one final question from a woman.
You have to let this woman ask a question.
That's who I'm going to.
Okay.
That's who I'm going to. She was going to be my final one. Okay. I knew there was one person to pull us out of this.
I want to say, ma'am, you have been jumping up and down, yelling and screaming. I want you to really right now examine, is this worth it?
It's worth it.
There's absolutely no way.
We're going to do something a little bit different tonight. Tonight, we're only going to take one question from the audience. Ma'am, say your name in the best Nicolas Cage voice and ask your question.
My name's Jacqueline. I don't know.
Okay, so my question is this. I was so sad when he died 45 minutes into the movie. I thought that there were going to be another Nicolas Cage twin coming into the movie. Like, was that something that you guys would totally, like, be down with? Like, he died out way early on.
I'm not gonna lie. You burned
700 calories jumping up and down to ask that question.
I mean, even when Paul was walking toward you, you didn't stop jumping.
So the question is,
would you be down
in a movie
with that?
Where there are twins, did we think part of the reveal would be another set of twins?
No.
I feel comfortable saying, no, I did not.
No, it wasn't even that. She asked if we would be down with that. Would we be down with another twin
I feel
in a
comfortable
movie that
saying,
was already made?
I feel comfortable saying, no, I would not like it.
I mean, I
but
guess
would you
I'll
be down
say
with it?
I would be down with it. Sure.
Well, because of time, we weren't able to go to the audience for questions tonight.
That's a bummer.
But let's get right down to second opinions.
That's right. We have an opinion about this movie, but there are people out there with a different opinion. It is now time for second opinions.
Yo, I got a second opinion, and I'm so glad that you're hearing that. I just finished this movie, and that was touching my spirit so much I had to hop on Amazon.com just to let you people know that this movie's the bomb. I watch this movie every night with my family and friends, and then I wait for them to leave, and then I watch it again, top to bottom. Crazy movies are fun, but I think that thought was lost on everyone. Yo, ignore the reviews. Movie critics are ruthless. Worst of them all, June Paul Mazukas. Just stop it. You're so caught up looking for logic. Characters and plot, man, all of it's toxic. I'm hyping, I'm lit, because this flick is the shit. I give this movie 5 stars. If I could, I'd give it 6.
Whoa, amazing! Give it up for Tony. Holy shit, that was amazing. Here we go. LA may not be the place for questions, but it is the place for song. Here we go. Now it's time for second opinions.
That is his mom. Oedipus complex. Why is the O silent? Why did they have slow sex? Second opinions. I don't know why you'd have them. The plot is a turducken. 3 Coppolas. Fuck them. When your dad in his locker, find your uncle, run a con. Together, Mickey Dolenz is a bad guy. You may ask why he is not a monkey on Deadfall. On Deadfall.
There you go. Thank you, Genevieve. What did I tell you? Spidey sense. Genevieve, that was fantastic. Okay. 42 reviews for Deadfall on Amazon. In total. It's a very low number. It averages 3.6 out of 5 stars. There are 36% are 5-star reviews. I'll say this much. The 5-star reviews are in on it for the most part in these. So this one is written by Proizzle. And Proizzle writes in December 17th, 2016, "Dude, this movie is so entertaining. Not for those easily insulted. 5 stars. Insulted?
Like insulted by bad filmmaking.
Michelle Huss in February 2015 said, "To give the story the right number of stars for the cheesy feel to the movie, -2 stars. I do mean cheesy. For more twists in the storyline than balloon animals at the fair, 3 stars. So now we're at 1 star. For the not obvious clues I saw after the fact, I felt like an idiot. 2 stars. Now we're at 3 stars. The best part of the whole movie, Nicolas Cage, 5 stars. 8 stars. That is it. 5 out of 5. And then
wow, that's like that new math.
Yeah. That's what Terrence Howard invented, right? All right, so this one is... Okay, this was a good one. From Dakota, "Watched it until Cage dies. Up until that point, it was amazing. 5 stars.
I will say, once he's gone, it is a much worse movie.
Yeah, so it sounds like you would be down for a twin.
I mean, I guess I've seen him do it in adaptation, so right. I guess I can see it being done. I guess I'd be down with it.
And finally, we end
you
on...
You win!
And finally, we end on Gordon New, who writes, "The dark scenes are blacker than noir, and the dialogue is riper than Pulp Fiction. Kig's character is original. His calculated overacting is as fine as parody as I've ever seen. He put some thought into the role and did a far better job than most of his work requires. The obligatory intrigue is masterfully done. The dramatic cinematography is magnificent. The musical score is straight out of history. The plot has more twists."
Wait, whoa. The musical score was straight out of history?
Out of history.
What does that mean?
Just out of history.
What is that, straight out of history?
I thought this was a facetious review, but I don't think it is.
The musical score was straight out of history.
"And the plot has more twists than my grandma's pretzels. Well acted, well produced, and well edited. Enjoyable on so many levels. 5 stars. Wonderful movie."
Wait, was that from Paul Wetzel?
No, I was going to say it was... I didn't know how to correlate it to Aunt Annie.
Oh, yeah.
This movie came out in 1993. The budget was... Anyone want to take a guess at that budget? $10 million.
Where?
$10 million. And the opening weekend gross was $9,183. The... domestic gross was $18,369.
And how is there a sequel? How did they get a sequel? That's crazy.
I think that Nicolas Cage just said he wanted to do it. It ranked 252 out of all the movies that came out in 1993. To give you an idea of what was coming out in 1993, Jurassic Park, Mrs. Doubtfire, The Fugitive. This movie was beaten by Demolition Man, Super Mario Brothers, Body of Evidence, Surf Ninjas, Mr. Nanny, and Airborne. And there are only 7 movies made in 1993 that made less money than Deadfall. 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. And we thank our producer, Avril Halley, for bringing this movie to our attention.
Holy cow.
And before we leave, I want to just... Avril made this. It's a mashup of all the VO in the movie. I won't play the whole thing.
My favorite line was, "The coast was alive, but I had no time for the sights." The coast was alive?
This is just the VO all cut together. I'll just play a little bit of it, and we'll put this up online. So here you go.
"Secret I swore I'd uncover. The coast was alive, but I had no time for the sights. I was looking for something to tip me off. A break in the routine. A place to start the hunt.
It looked like I had to pay my dues by wilding with Uncle Lou's flunky.
Fucking fucker's fucked!
Well, at least he was a lively fellow.
Shape the con, or it'll shape you, Pop would say. Wise words my new friend Eddie never learned. He was the type of badass bluff man that was stuck on the high you get from the con. And that's bad news. Eddie was kid stuff. Lou was the real deal. He was as clever as Pop, a true pro of the high con. I saw that right away. And he had..."
Just a little taste of just all the VO mashed together.
I would love it if someone would just cut together all of the Nicolas Cage lines. I would watch that, like...
I mean, it's here. It is here, right? I think when I just Googled it, it just popped up. It just says, like, yeah, honoring the craziest performance.
Oh, great.
Nicolas Cage.
Thank God.
I mean, we don't have time to watch
Thank
that.
Thank God it's there. This exists.
Watch it at your leisure. It's 7 minutes.
This audience is insane.
All right. Thank you, LA. You have been a fantastic crowd.
All right, and that was us live from the Wiltern. A big thank you to Chelsea Peretti, who is just fantastic. We are so excited to have her back. And just so you all know, we are on tour right now. Go to hdtgminfo.com for more information about where you can get tickets. Tickets are still available. We are on tour right now. We're maybe in your city. Look around, see if you can find us. A big thank you to our producer, Avril Halley, for cutting these clips and finding these movies. Nate Kiley for doing all of our research. Devin, who's here in the Wiltern with us. Cody Fisher, our other producer. Everybody at Earwolf. Also, Kyle Waldron for doing our amazing artwork that you see on our Instagram and Facebook page. And by the way, follow us all on the social media. We love that. We love to have you there, especially the How Did This Get Made social media. And let's continue this conversation about Deadfall next week on our mini episode, where you can give me a call at 619-PAUL-ASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK. We'll see you next time for a How Did This Get Made mini episode.
Hi, I'm Nick Vatterott.
And I'm Nick Turner.
And we are the hosts of Get Rich Nick.
For this podcast, we are out there in the world trying every get rich quick scheme to tell you guys which ones actually work and which ones aren't worth your time. Like donating plasma.
Online poker.
TaskRabbit.
Writing ebooks.
Betting on the ponies.
Going on eBay.
Background extra.
Making money from metal detectors.
Lemonade stand.
Selling fruit in the backyard.
Trivia nights.
Selling fruit from the backyard.
We're walking dogs on Rover.
We're playing video games for cash.
We're starting a Patreon way too early.
Betting how much you walk.
Losing weight.
We're hijacking a truck going southbound to Tijuana, and no one's going anywhere until we get what we want.
If you are intrigued by any of that, thank you.
You can tell which ones are not worth your time because we're still doing the podcast. If we were rich, we'd be on a yacht somewhere on a rainbow.
Get Rich Nick is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.